This is CliffCentral.com. The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye, a proudly South African multi-commodity mining company. At Sibanye, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. We are proud of our partnership with the Leadership Platform and will continue to support leaders who are committed to growing our country. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, transforming towards an empowered society. And welcome to Periscope viewers. Welcome to everyone, our live audience. It's great to be with you. I'm Adrian Groenewald, and with me, Louis Groenewald. Welcome.
Looking forward to the program, Adrian.
Yeah, we have a special guest. Introduce her in a moment. Go to leadershipplatform.com. One word, two P's in the middle for all things leadership, for articles and so on. Of course, our Leadership Masterclass, first half hour, a Leadership Master lesson. And today we talk about developing a culture of excellence. We've spoken about this theme a few times, but you can never speak about it enough. Developing a culture of excellence. And with us on the panel is one of the Business Women Association finalists, or the Business Women of the Year finalists. On Friday evening, they announced the winners. And it's Patricia Dlamini. Welcome, Patricia.
Thanks, Adrian.
All the way from Uitenhaag.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for making the effort to be here. And I think that makes you a special finalist, probably, in this competition. Who knows, you may end up being the title bearer. I will tell you more about Patricia, but in essence, CEO at Uitenhaag Dispatch Development Initiative, and she spearheads development and societal transformation at the helm of her organization, the Uitenhaag Dispatch Development Initiative. And what their vision is really to be a leader in socioeconomic development in the Nelson Mandela Bay municipality. That's just seen political change. So I don't know if that impacts. We'll find out. So, yeah, she's our special guest, and, of course, Louis Groenewald. And today we talk about developing a culture of excellence. That's the next 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And in the second half hour, we zoom in on our special guest, Patricia. You know, what has she learned as a leader in her career? And she certainly stands out in what she's doing. All right, folks, let's talk about developing a culture of excellence. We'll start with Patricia, because I actually asked her, what theme do you think we should chew on today? What theme should we discuss and unpack, and whatever word you want to throw in there? And she suggested this, and also in the context of a not-for-profit organization. But I think the principles we discussed today, Patricia, will be universal.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about it in general, and then we can, if we want, if we have time, bring it back to perhaps what makes a not-for-profit organization so unique. So you kick us off. Your thoughts on creating a culture of excellence, and bearing in mind the audience doesn't know exactly your background. They'll find out in the second half, but you're a CEO, and you have incredible leadership background. And then we asked Louis some thoughts on creating such a culture. Go for it.
Okay, Adrian, thank you so much. For me, one of the things that are very important to notice, to recognize, is all institutions have got shareholders, and the shareholder interest is very important. As that being said, what needs to be in place are the pillars that make value, create value for shareholders. And human resources, the human capital, are critical and central, really, for that. So we talk excellence. We talk excellence around the type of teams you build, the type of vision you share, and the communication strategies that you have. So for me, the bigger aspect of an organizational strategy comes from your human resource strategy. Is it aligned? Is it linked? And is it leading to that excellence to create value for the shareholder?
All right, so you say to create an organization of excellence, you have to understand one thing and understand it clearly. Human resources are very important.
Very.
And some people have an issue with calling it resources, but yeah, we know what you mean. I mean, that's the human component.
The capital.
So is your strategy linked to the people, to their skills, to, I don't know, their happiness, their well-being, that sort of thing? You mentioned shareholders, of course. Yes, in the end, if you run a business and it does not make the shareholders happy, which unfortunately mostly means just the superficial money part, then you don't run an excellent organization. Teams. So you can have a lot of very brilliant human resources, but if they don't somehow form teams, and teams are not united and aligned, then you have a problem. Okay. Anything else that you would throw out?
Yeah. One of the things around teams is that the understanding, I think, through my leadership, my experience in the years, is that I've learned that when you build teams, you don't only build people that look and think like you. You need to bring in people that complement you where you are not strong. So leaders, it starts from the front. If I'm a leader, I need to know what I need to be complimented on. So building teams talks to you first, being self-actualized as a leader, knowing where your shortcomings are, where you're not strong at, and then bring a team and build teams that complement that. But the other aspect of it is that it's not about you also only. It's about the complete team. So what are the systems saying to enabling everybody feel like they create value, they're adding value in the organization? That's quite critical for me. So it's not communication from top down. It's engagement. So engagement is very good, is very important.
So I mean, you're assuming then that the leader who leads the organization knows herself.
Absolutely.
That she really knows herself, not just from a strength point of view, but from a weakness point of view.
Absolutely.
All right. Louis, some comments, some thoughts on culture of excellence?
Just mention, Patrice, you mentioned about the stakeholders, not just the shareholders, obviously, what you're saying nowadays. Our awareness of stakeholders has increased dramatically. Before it was the shareholders and top management. Nowadays it's, wow, it's a variety of things. Even social media have to be considered. It impacts heavily on the organization culture. Patricia, I want to mention two things. We've had some tremendous sessions on this program about developing a company culture and climate. And Professor Theo Feltzman from UJ is a regular visitor to us. And a couple of things I'd just like to mention is an imperative which we look for us being in the field so much. So one is obviously the environmental side. This is the organization side that management do all they can to build their kind of culture. The second imperative is that you mentioned about the leader being self-actualization. The second part is that no culture can really work if people don't not personally accountable for their own transformation attitude. This is very important. So ultimately, we live in an environment, a mindset is being created that these things need to be done for us. And that's, it's got to be done. Politicians are very good at promising delivery, which is not so easy to do. But the ability to breed that accountability in each individual, that's where the true art of leadership comes in. Because once you start speaking of accountability, they say, oh yes, they want to run away from the responsibility as leaders, and it's not the case. So I'm saying, if people speak of organization culture, I would say, well, how do you go about developing that sense of accountability and of personal self-actualization that you spoke about? As well, over and above the efforts of the environment around you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Louis, you're touching on a very important thing. When we say we want to build an organization of teams that are aware, teams that share the same vision, because one of the things is that people, generally, people find a job to earn a living. But you find those excellent individuals who don't necessarily, they see the reward, but bigger than the reward is satisfaction. So it's a whole bunch of excited individuals that want to be part of this great vision. They want to know the, creating a legacy, type of thing. I always say a legacy is what you've left in the organization you left. It's not what you are doing internally. So it's those people with that vision that while I'm here, I want to leave this thing and do it with all my might, whatever level of responsibility. So as a leader now, my role is to create systems that then will reward, recognize, and know your team, know the teams, know who's playing what role, and create platforms that they can play and be themselves. That's why I'm saying it's more than just the person at the head. It's the people in the organization that pass the ball or that dribble the right direction towards the same vision. So communication as a leader is very important. I'll communicate my vision clearly to the people, and then the team will come on board and say, I see myself playing that role. And then as a leader, I go back and say, well done, here's a reward. When you haven't done well, here is a remediation for that. So you have to have all those platforms ready. It's a responsibility of the leader in the organization to drive that culture.
Arjun, I see the word engagement, sounds technical, but it takes on a whole new dimension of meaning. You can't do this. What I see behind a company that does this is the kind of fire in the people trying to do this. You feel like their passion, their compassion, and their desire, and people sense that body language, and that's very important. If leaders are technical alone, people aren't convinced. So this engagement takes on a new meaning, she spoke about.
But Patricia, you talk of different individuals in your organization to try and, I guess, instill that sense of accountability.
Yeah.
Of being there not just for a salary, but for more. Some people grew up that way. Okay, it's their values, it's the way it worked in their family, and they carry that with them into society, into the workplace. And we love them because they walk in there and they just have this zest for life, and they are accountable and responsible. Others need a trigger. Others didn't necessarily get that from their upbringing, but they have it in them.
Yeah.
And then there are those few, that small percentage where you can do all you want. Somehow it just doesn't trigger in your lifetime. It might trigger in the next business. The thing I want to throw out here immediately, and that we always discover in these conversations, is how much of it stems from the top leader. In other words, does he or she subscribe to a personal life of excellence?
Yeah.
And that's my personal culture. My personal culture is whatever I do excellently.
Yeah.
And because of that, I will probably take that thinking and that attitude into the business fairly far, hopefully to my team a little bit deeper, but I can't influence the whole organization necessarily, although we know the culture stems from the top. So that's the one thing I just want to put out here. I think both of you are saying that. Do I honestly subscribe to a culture of excellence? And usually people at the top, not always, they do. You could have a culture of excellence for the wrong motives, with the wrong values attached, or with the right values attached. I mean, that's another debate. And then does the top leader surround him or herself with individuals that do the same? Mm. So I can have a culture of excellence, but the kind of people I employ, that I look for, that I want around me, you said cover for my weaknesses, but also how do I employ people who have that personal culture of excellence? Does that make sense? So that's a good start for a culture of excellence, is that it stems from me and my team. That's the kind of people I employ. You can make mistakes, no doubt.
Absolutely.
But that's what you need around you.
Yeah. Some leadership book I read, I can't remember the author, speaks of issues around people when they leave organizations, they leave the managers.
Mm.
I do believe that works a lot. So let me take it on the positive side now. What if I end up with a team, make mistakes in my recruitment processes, I end up with a team of people who don't share the vision with me? I'd be happy those people leave. So sometimes you do want to work people out of organizations if it's cultural misfit. But if you drive excellence from the top, and reward and recognize excellence, because there is one thing driving excellence for your own personal recognition as a leader, but you must share the successes of the organization. It's very, very important to bring and highlight to everybody, this is our achievement. Mm. And if we fail, if we have a weak link in the team, such will reflect to everybody across. So everybody buys into that. And people who feel the heat, if you're in the kitchen and the heat is too hot, they exit the organization. So you'll have those that are comfortable, they'll stay. But you work with winning teams. Unfortunately, not everyone is going to be excellent, but don't drop excellence to accommodate people and make everybody comfortable. I think that's important.
Now let excellence be the common denominator, and then you deal with the exception.
Yeah.
So in this company, non-excellence is the exception. We know we'll have them. You'll always have them. And then is the team clear about the daily purpose of why the organization exists? You know, we take this for granted, I think. Yeah. So if you take UDDI, Utenag, Dispatch, what is it? Let's get it
Development.
Right. Development Initiative.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
UDDI. Let's make sure people know what it stands for.
Mm.
You can literally employ people who do not eat, breathe, sleep, think, understand the essence of the purpose of why you exist. Because when you start employing technical people, those accounts or administrative jobs, it's very easy to say, well, let me just be good at the admin. You're not going to get the excellence, the deepest, highest excellence out of any individual unless they are passionately linked with the purpose of why UDDI exists. Does it make sense? And maybe you're happy to have 50% effort from someone in some jobs. I don't know. These days, I don't know that you can afford that. But a deep sense of purpose.
Yeah. I think you're speaking about affordability. I've got also, I'm fortunate I come from an organization that is resource thin. And, you know, when we get resources, we have to be very innovative. So we can't carry people or any sort of baggage that will strain the resource to not meet its objective. So when you bring in teams or when you work with people, sometimes I arrive in the organization, I don't come with everybody, I find people. But it's how you then take the strategy and not make it your strategy. You know, many organizations I've come across where a strategy belongs to executive management and the board. But if strategy is everybody, they understand why you sit at different levels, create platforms for the strategy to be engaged by everybody, even the administrator, because the agency or the understanding that who is our client, who's our stakeholder from reception is very important to the success of the CEO's work. I always say, if people don't understand that my community, that walks in through that door and wants to see the CEO, if he's not treated well, it reflects on into my office directly. But I haven't seen the community members. So everyone has to know that they add to this puzzle, so that when UDDI is deemed to be really changing lives, it's not the CEO's changing lives, it's the institution with its people. So it's very important that we communicate. It's that communication and platforms for engaging at everybody's understanding level. You know, not to assume that you've got a bound a strategy document, everyone must carry it and read it. Create platforms that will be understood at all levels of the organization.
Okay. So further to build a culture of excellence, I'm saying everyone buy into the sense, the deep essence and purpose of why this organization exists, how it started, originated. You know, it's the whole induction program where you try and get everyone on board to sense the heartbeat of this business. And then the vision. Where are we going? We all talk about this. If I'm part of a business and I'm really clear about where it's going in the next few years, ideally, and I like that, and I can see that impacting me personally and my family and my interests, then I'll also be functioning more excellently.
Yeah.
So on the purpose and the vision thing, Louis, any comments on that?
I was thinking, Patricia, leadership is tough. We know that. It takes fighting and endurance ability. We use a principle we call the CONC, compensation leadership. By CONC, it's an abbreviation for cost of non-compliance. So as you spoke, you've got to evaluate, and then sometimes you come across people that just don't want to comply. Now, that's got to be managed properly. Your feelings on those people that really have different agendas, you've done your best. What do you do about them?
Louis, HRM, human resource management, is very tough. There is the issue about making sure that you also respect the law when you engage these things. But
especially in our country, they're tough. Yeah.
Yes, but the important thing is systems. I spoke about systems in the beginning, policies, because I think a lot of these things are made difficult by when people have a sense of you're fair or not fair. The policy and the law should even work, even if you take the individual away. Everyone should be understanding that if my performance contract says I'm going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, if I've done 1 and 2, 3 and 4 are not done, I have not performed. So it goes back to making sure that whilst we're busy to make to deliver service, we need to also make sure that in-house systems are in place. Systems that will help us when we're in trouble. I always say systems, sometimes when we're running good, you think you don't need them until you are in trouble, and then you don't have a policy that assists you to deal with these issues. I don't believe CCMA would be weird to me if I followed by the book because I had a policy. But most of the times we're caught because we're running, we're service delivery orientated, we want to impress the external shareholder, the funder and everybody. We forget the team, that everything, if we give them something, we need to make sure that what is the mitigation, what are the remedial actions that you need to take if anything doesn't go according, and communicate that, and everybody signs to it. So it speaks to the systems that you put in.
Yes, a beautiful point, Adrian. We consultant a few years ago in a large gold mining company, not Sibanye, by the way, they're a successful company. But in this situation, we ran across some serious problem with the staff that felt management weren't consistent. Remember, it's a safety is a vital thing of a gold mining company, but they weren't consistent in applying the regulations. So some people get away with things, others not, and that breaks down the trust a great deal. So you're saying if you have systems in place, it'll build a trust situation if they apply, and they normally necessary when you're in trouble. And if they aren't in place, then you've got another problem.
Just on the conk factor, cost of non-compliance. When people don't perform or align themselves somehow with the purpose of the business and the vision and so on, and their specific role, there's a cost attached to that, isn't there?
Absolutely.
But for me to act tough, to take them on and to warn them or to try and remediate, that also often has a cost attached to it. Okay, so if I have to end up firing someone, there's a cost.
Absolutely.
And we can work that out very clearly. And a new person must be trained, negativity of staff and a dip in performance in that specific division. So as a leader, I have to instinctively and sometimes very scientifically work out what is the cost of this person not performing and just not pulling their weight versus the cost of having to be tough.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you say, okay, I'll hold on to the devil I know. And sometimes you say, no, I've got to get rid of this, and then find another person. So that's a very difficult call to make as a leader. So I've got here sense of purpose, sense of vision, very clear. Those are givens. Team members clear about their roles. There's nothing as non-excellent as people not being absolutely clear about what they are expected to do against the vision and the purpose of the existence of this organization. So that's important to have an excellent organization. Are they recognized? You mentioned this very clearly. You said recognize people for performance, but hold them accountable for non-delivery.
Absolutely.
All right. On roles, have you picked up anything around that in your life? I mean, sometimes people seem to know their roles, and then after a while, they don't seem to be passionate about it anymore. You've got to have the right bums in the right seats.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I find that always keeps the team motivated or personal individuals motivated as individuals is consistent engagement on where they want to go, who they want to be. We change as individuals. One day I came
correct,
in,
yeah.
I want to be this, and then 3 years later, you know what, I don't want to be this, I want to be there. So if we as leaders, we then engage our team on a frequent at performance evaluation or even frequently informally to say, are we still on, what are you dreaming of, what are your dreams, where do you want to go? Sometimes you'll find people, because they've got personal issues at that point in time, their life is changing and you miss it because you don't engage. That's why sometimes I think women leaders have that, because they're more empathetical, they can engage at that level. It's very important, because if the individual is not happy at home or has issues, whatever the issues are at home, and they just don't see the other side working, you will never get them to perform. Even if you're excellent performing person, once they have other things, but if you don't then assist them with those, that's why organizations that are really forward thinking have staff wellness programs. It could be home or health issues, whatever the situation is, but you cannot then drop the ball or throw your employee into a dustbin. Once the person was good to the organization, how do you then, with that cost now, you're going to incur the cost, they contributed. So it's a weighing of saying, I mean, I've been spinning profits or I've been delivering efficiently, now this person is in a situation, how do you as an organization responsibly, this is your first stakeholder, your employee is your first stakeholder, and they need to be taken care of. So I think it's that sort of balance.
I wish one can get leaders to catch the vision of how important it is to stay connected to the individual.
Absolutely.
Especially in today's world. It's probably always been important, but I'm not so sure. You see, leaders have to comply to so many issues that they sit in front of their computer all day and they don't find those quality moments with individuals who, as you said, whose aspirations change over time. They have different phases in their life. So if I think this employee still wants the same things 2-3 years from now, I'm not so sure that that's true. So now they're unhappy. Oh, but hold on, 2-3 years ago you were happy in this job. This is what you wanted. Why are you not happy now? Well, I've changed. How dare you change? So that ability to connect to the individual and know how... And human beings are different now. They're not just happy with a job for life these days. The world offers so much more. The world exposes you to so much more. So people change, they want more, they want different, because they've seen different. And it's very difficult for leaders, but the common issue here is remain connected to those that you can on an individual level. Get to know them. When you get to know them, you know when they change, what the new role should be, what new talents have they acquired. They want a new seat on the bus, but the bus keeps going. We know where the bus is going. we might have another bus behind us and yet another bus, but we're going in the right direction. We know what our purpose is.
Artie, it's a lovely point. Patricia, I was a management partner in a company, IT company, years ago. Mm-hmm. And the person I was partner with is a very experienced businessman, Francois van Niekerk, who did very well ultimately. And he had this unique ability. By the way, the thesis for his MBA was to do the kind of leadership, wasn't dictatorial, etc. But anyway, ability, he'd go around sitting with individual members and having a solid talk for 15, 20 minutes. He never allowed the organization to get in his way to connect. The heritage he built was incredible. Years later, 15 we had a get together, and the people still have that profound respect for him, which is quite unique as well, because he stayed connected as well. And it didn't allow the hierarchy to stand in his way, because often bosses do that. Well, I don't want to undermine my report, so therefore, I'm not, that has nothing to do with it. You've got a right to do that, an obligation to do that too.
You know, I just want to chip in there. You spoke about Louis trust earlier on, and this comes in because people will engage with me openly if they feel they trust me. So it's a two-way street. With the employee needs to feel they can engage you, and you are trustworthy to be privy to information that may be compromising. You know, once people start feeling, if I tell my employer this, I'm going to lose my job because I'm no longer as valuable. So it's that trust issue, and organizations and leaders need to really work on that trust, build the trust, and trust, you know, it's very, I'm not sure what I could say you could put in place. Trust just comes natural when people find, it's not what you do. It's how people figure out how you react to them around them. You know, it's much more than just telling you, I trust you, or you can trust me, you know. It's much, much more. That becomes the center of the engagement, and when you can get to a person, get to know a person, they can come into your office and close the door, and you're not going to say, have you spoken to your three managers? It's a personal thing. They want to engage you. So you can engage, you can allow that, and you leave it and deal with it from that point of view. So it's very important.
But don't you find, Patricia, especially in our country, you know, just a reconciliation set a tone, but that people are very forgiving if you're honest and upright with them. It's when you're hypocritical.
Absolutely.
So in our country, people, so if you're honest, that's where the trust comes. You're not being perfect, but being honest and building the trust.
I think a whole show on trust would be a very good thing. But I learned something important about trust, is that there's almost two levels. There's professional trust. I trust that you can do your job. I've seen you do it. I know you can do it. And you're successful. You're a damn good accountant. So I trust that. Then there's vulnerability trust.
Yeah.
Is where we have such a good relationship that you can be vulnerable in my presence. And in your team's presence, where I can actually say, guys, I messed up. I don't feel like everyone's going to crucify me when I say I messed up. I can say, I actually don't know what the answer to this is. Guys, this thing is challenging me. Tell my team, this is challenging me. And I need your help in this. I feel I can make myself vulnerable in the presence of my colleagues. Then you have the highest level of trust in that team.
Absolutely.
It's not just you accept me when I perform super well.
Yeah.
And that's all. So that's another element of excellence. The other thing I want to mention is it's fine to have a very clear understanding of purpose, where we're going, vision. You must know how you're going to get there, the strategy, the direction, as we talk of. And you mentioned earlier the relevant structures, systems, procedures that you need in place that serve or support the direction and the vision. When you look at all these principles we've discussed very, very quickly today around a culture of excellence, the relevance in a not-for-profit organization where you find yourself, I don't think anything is out of place. Are there one or two key points that leaders must remember that's important in terms of a culture of excellence in a not-for-profit organization? Because there is a different culture there. You know, how do you create a really high-level, internationally benchmarked not-for-profit organization where people are very professional? We know what happens when you don't have competition or when people don't make money. There's a lot of so is there anything different in that environment that you would throw out?
I think for me, one of the critical thing there is recruitment, systems for recruitment, because it's not the ordinary person who's looking for a job and a good payout. NPOs don't pay, if I may say that. But the important thing is that people who do social entrepreneurship work have a particular vision, personal passion about doing things. So those are the sort of people you want to have on the team. But also, because budgets are stringent, the common thing that usually happens is that you don't provide for employee development. And for me, retention of staff and your role in adding and growing your team is very important. So I think when you look at what is the value I need to deliver this to the when you're speaking to the shareholder, you need to be cognizant that if you want to deliver for the shareholder, you need to make sure that you create a budget that works to develop your team. It's very important. Develop and retain. So develop and retain speaks to give them skills, but also make them give them market competitive rewards or remuneration. Sometimes it doesn't need to be in monetary terms. It could be in days taken off. It could be in ability to go and sit and do your studies. It could be an opportunity to pursue a research project that benefits you as your own. So you can do an exchange, but it's very important that leaders of NPOs realize that because the financial resource is low, how do you innovatively work around that resource? Yeah. But the people are very important.
Let me just say this. Leaders make a massive mistake. I've seen this. You run an engineering company or a law firm or mining company, doesn't matter what it is, and you look at your attorneys all over the business and you say, well, these guys chose to be attorneys. They made that choice in their life, so they must naturally be motivated in this environment. These people chose to be engineers, so therefore why must I motivate them? They are where they chose to be, and now they must motivate themselves. And in an NPO where you're trying to change the social fabric of an environment in Nelson Mandela Bay or wherever, it's easy to fall into that trap and say, well, these people want to be here. You know, they have a passion for the specific purpose of why we exist. So therefore, why must I try and motivate them and inspire them? Yeah. It's a big mistake when we do that, because human beings, just the fact, mere fact that I want to be here doesn't mean I'm always going to be motivated.
Absolutely.
Again, my life changes, my circumstances change. Yeah. So again, as a leader, be connected to your people and always be close to them. It's a never-ending job, often thankless. And last thing I want to say is this. We've had numerous experts on the show that made it very clear that when the environment is not a happy one, it's almost chemically your brain even changes. The neuroscience tell us, neuroleadership tell us that when people feel under negative pressure from an autocratic, strong, dominant boss, they actually freeze. Their brain changes. They can't think innovatively and creatively.
Absolutely.
So they won't be happy. So make the people happy, but not at the cost of performance, of excellence.
Yeah.
And don't let people walk all over you as the leader just because you're a nice woman or a nice man.
Yeah.
But if you want the chemicals in the brain to work right, you have to have happy people.
Absolutely.
Then you will have a culture of creativity, because if you don't these days, you are... Well, you'll end very, very fast. All right, that's Patricia Dlamini from UDDI and Louis Groenewald. All about a culture of excellence. That'll be a podcast, so do download that, and hopefully it assists you in developing a culture of excellence and helping your leaders see some interesting viewpoints. Next up, we will continue interviewing Patricia Dlamini as a Businesswoman of the Year finalist Friday evening. They will be announced, of course, if you want to join... buy a table or join this prestigious event, you can actually email PM, let me get the email address right, PM at BWASA, that's Businesswomen Association of South Africa.co.za, and then you can probably book a seat or a table. And maybe our guest today is one of the winners. She's flying back today and flying back again on Friday to be at the event. Stay with us, just a few minutes, a 30-second break, and then we'll interview Patricia. What will she do if she ends up on this platform, and what has she learned on her career path?
This is CliffCentral.com.